BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Before you get stuck into this episode, I want to tell you about some changes we're making to where you can find this podcast. From next month, you can hear Desert Island Discs 28 days before anyone else, for free, on BBC Sounds. If you haven't already, you can download the BBC Sounds app to listen to Desert Island Discs first. It's easy. Once you're there, you'll find even more podcasts that are available on Sounds before anywhere else, live BBC radio and exclusive music mixes. Just search for Desert Island Discs, subscribe, and if you want, we'll send you a notification every time a new episode is ready. I told you it was easy. Now, let's get back to the podcast.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. And, for rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is the actress and dancer Leslie Caron, one of the standout stars of Hollywood's golden age. Her career has encompassed cinema, television and theatre in every decade since the 1950s, including the title role in the classic film Gigi that took home a record 9 Academy Awards. She broke through playing ingenues opposite Hollywood royalty. There was an American in Paris with Gene Kelly in 1951 when she was barely out of her teens, Daddy Longlegs with Fred Astaire, and later the comedy Father Goose with Cary Grant. But her performances show depth as well as brilliance, often drawing on her experiences of growing up in occupied Paris. The war robbed her family of their wealth, and her mother, who'd once been a dancer herself, developed severe depression. It was in a bid to please her that 11-year-old Leslie began ballet lessons. She was on stage as a teenage ballerina in Paris when her talent was spotted by an awestruck audience member, Gene Kelly. Her many accolades include BAFTAs, a Golden Globe and presidential recognition on both sides of the Atlantic, though she puts her success down to a self-discipline that is as military as it is artistic. She says, "I have been trained like a soldier to work. I'll die if I can't express myself that way." Leslie Caron, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you. What a wonderful introduction.
So, Leslie, tell me, where does this work ethic of yours come from, do you think? And is it still as strong as ever?
Oh, no. I've learned to be almost retired. I do my exercise every day. Discipline is everything in life, I think, if you want to live a long life, which I'm trying to do.
Do you still enjoy the atmosphere of being on a set or stage after all these years? I mean, we saw you quite recently performing in the ITV drama The Dorrells.
Yes, but I do prefer to watch great actors act now to see how skillful actors are.
Is there part of you in your heart that's on stage there with the cast and crew or would like to be?
No. They can have it. I'm very happy sitting and admiring them.
I should say that this isn't the first time that you've been to the Desert Island. At 90, you're still trying new things. Today, you're setting a new record here at Desert Island Discs. Your last appearance on the programme was in July 1956.
Oh, my God.
As far as we know, yours is the greatest gap between trips to the island in our programme's 80-year history.
Well, obviously, I thought it was a good idea to go on the desert island for a bit. So I wanted to try it again.
All right, well, let's dive in. Let's hear your first choice today, Leslie Caron. What is it and why have you chosen it?
It's L'Accordéoniste, sung by Edith Piaf. When I was a little girl, my brother and I, we lived in a little villa, mansion, and in the basement were the kitchens and the staff. And we had firm orders never to enter. But we loved going there because there was the butler. His name was Alban, and he played the accordion. And to me, it was absolutely magic. I used to love to run away down to the basement and listen around the kitchen table, listen to Alban. Furthermore, I love that record of Edith Piaf. The most marvelous thing in the world would be to be able to sing like she did. So I used to practice on that record of hers, L'accordéoniste.
Quand son boulot s'achève, elle s'en va à son tour, chercher un peu de rêve dans un bal du faubourg. Son homme est un artiste, c'est un drôle de petit gars, un accordéoniste qui sait jouer la java. Elle écoute la java, mais elle ne la danse pas, elle ne regarde même pas la piste.
L'accordéoniste, Edith Piaf. Leslie Caron, you were born in Paris in 1931, and your father was a pharmacist, your father Claude. Your mother Margaret, she was American, and she'd been a dancer and actually performed on Broadway. I think they met when she was on a trip to Paris, and she'd been married before they met. What did your grandparents make of her?
My grandparents did not quite approve because she had been a dancer, meaning she'd shown her legs on the stage. Furthermore, her hair was bleached, and furthermore, she smoked.
Oh, wow.
I mean, she really had every sin. But my father was infatuated with her and adored her all his life.
What was he like as a personality? How do you remember him?
He was extremely polite. He taught me manners. He taught me you always take off your gloves to shake hands with someone. And he taught me to dissect a fish. That doesn't sound very necessary, but when you're in a restaurant, it is. And I know very well, like as if I were a waiter, I know how to dissect a fish.
Well, that might come in handy on your desert island, Leslie. That skill
Absolutely.
Might prove itself necessary today.
Yes, yes.
Your mother sounds like she was a little bit more of a complicated prospect.
She, unfortunately, had been abandoned by her father. She never quite recovered from the abandonment. It's like a stray dog. You adopt a dog who's been abandoned and he never forgets having been abandoned. I have to be honest. My mother was very honest. And she said, listen, I don't like children. And I'm not going to take care of you when you're little because I'm not interested. But when you're a star, I will be there. I knew what I had to do. It was quite clear.
It must have been shattering to hear your mother say that. I don't like children. I won't be bothering with you. And, you know, but when you're a star, I'll be there. I mean, do you remember your feelings at the time? You must have been heartbroken.
No, I wasn't heartbroken. I knew my mother. That's the way she was. She would just say it the way she felt it.
It's time for some more music, Leslie. What's your next track and why are you taking it with you today?
Maria Callas. I think she's the greatest that ever lived. And there's one opera by Puccini which she never sang on the stage, I was told. She made a recording of it. It just moves me every time I hear it. She sang Mi chiamano Mimi.
Thank you.
Puccini's Si mi chiamano Mimi from La Bohème, performed by Maria Callas with the Philharmonia Orchestra, conducted by Tullio Serafin. Leslie Caron, when war broke out, your father was drafted and he was sent to work on a hospital train. You were just 8 years old at the time, but you have said that that time marked the end of your childhood. What was life like for you during the war years?
On the 3rd of September 1939, my grandfather took me on his knee and cried and said, "My poor children, the war is declared." I remember the fear, mustn't do this, mustn't do that, be careful. Don't talk about your mother being American. I mean, there are men with machine guns, which they can point to you if they want to. And Paris changed so much. All those bags of sand and all those German signs everywhere. It wasn't Paris anymore. It just was written in Gothic black and white letters. You couldn't recognize where you were. It destroys the soul as well.
And how was your mother coping during this time? Because you hadn't been able to rely on her before. What happened when war began?
She took to her bed and started to study this 16th, 17th century France under royalty. She started studying Louis XIV.
What was going on, do you think, Leslie? Was she just trying to escape reality?
Yes, of course.
Was she depressed?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. The horror of it all. The greyness. Life was grey. Life was just grey.
Leslie, I think we'd better have some more music. It's your third choice today. What is it and why are you taking it to the island with you?
Ah, Jacques Brel, Ne me quitte pas. And it is a very profound song, very touching, moving. It's courageous too, because very few people will admit, please don't leave me.
Ne me quitte pas. Il faut oublier, tout peut s'oublier, qui s'enfuit déjà. Oublier le temps des malentendus et le temps perdu, à savoir comment. Oublier ces heures qui tuaient parfois à coups de pourquoi, le cœur du bonheur. Ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas.
Ne me quitte pas by Jacques Brel. So, Leslie Caron, I want to ask you about dancing. You started taking ballet lessons during the war. It was something your mother had insisted on. Why do you think she was so determined for you to dance? And how did you feel about it?
The thing is, she never enjoyed talking about anything else but ballet. So I automatically, in order to get the attention of my mother and perhaps her admiration, I thought ballet is the way.
And your mother was behind the announcement that you gave during a Sunday lunch with your grandparents when you were in your early teens. What did you tell them?
I opened my mouth and I said, "I want to be a dancer." My grandfather was outraged, was absolutely shocked. He turned to my mother and whispered loud enough for me to hear, "Margaret, do you want your daughter to be a whore?" Because in those days, that's what it amounted to. You showed your legs, your thighs, and that meant you were available for men.
How did you feel about that? You must have been shocked to overhear that. Obviously, he hadn't meant for you to hear him, but you did.
No, he hadn't. I remembered it for years and years and years and years. But nevertheless, I just kept doing it because I loved it.
At 16, you started at the famous Roland Petit's company, Les Ballets des Champs-Élysées. And during one performance, you were spotted by someone in the audience, Gene Kelly. A year later, you got an irresistible offer. What was it?
I received a phone call saying, "Leslie, Gene Kelly has decided, and the studio, have decided you're going to be the leading lady in their most important musical called An American in Paris. Oh, what's that? And Gershwin. Who? Gershwin, the greatest American composer of the day.
Speaking of music, we'd better have your fourth disc now. What's your next choice?
Miss Otis Regrets. Now, I always was very touched by that song. It's all about the lynching of black people. And Ella Fitzgerald sings it fabulously well.
And the moment before she died, she lifted up her lovely head and cried, "Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today."
Miss Otis Regrets, Ella Fitzgerald. So, Leslie Caron, you got the part in An American in Paris. You flew out to Los Angeles and started filming. You've described Gene Kelly as having a mathematical technician's passion and a kid's imagination, which sounds like a wonderful combination. How did you find working with him?
He called me the kid and he called me Lester the Pester. But he looked after me.
I know that you were still quite shy at that point, though. You started out doing some of your scenes with your back to the camera.
Yes, Gene would tell me, "Kiddo, turn your face towards the camera or your grandmother won't know you were in the film."
You no pushover, though, Leslie. You also had ideas of your own about how you wanted your character to look, for example. You had strong thoughts on her hair, I think.
Yes, I thought, those people don't know what the latest Paris fashion is. I keep telling them, shorter, shorter, shorter. But, you know, they wouldn't do it. So the night before, I took my little nail scissors, I chopped it all. I chopped my hair. Like a boy. So I arrived at makeup. Disaster. I mean, everybody turned up. The producer, Vincent Minnelli, Gene Kelly, of course. And I was with my shoulders against the brick wall. And they were all facing me, exactly like the firing squad.
So I bet they weren't too happy.
No.
How did it? What happened? How did you work
they
it out?
They shook their heads and said, "Oh, my God." And then Jean took me aside and said, "Honey, they fire girls for less than that." And they had to postpone the shooting that day. And for a whole week or two or three, and put in other scenes. I mean, it was a disaster. You can't do that.
It's time for your fifth disc, Leslie. And this, I think, relates to another of your co-stars, doesn't it?
Well, Fred Astaire was simply adorable and polite. And one day he said, "You step on my foot." I said, "No, Fred, you stepped on my foot." "Oh, so sorry, so sorry." I stepped on the foot of Fred Astaire.
"We're drinking, my friend, to the end of a brief episode. Make it one for my baby and one more for the road. I got the routine, so drop another nickel in the machine. I'm feeling so..."
Fred Astaire with "One for My Baby" from the film The Sky's the Limit. Leslie Caron, you're one of only six women who's danced with both Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly. I know better than to ask you your favourite dancer because you won't tell me, but tell me a little bit about how their styles compared. What was it like dancing with them?
May I also mention Baryshnikov and Nureyev?
I mean, please do. Feel
okay,
free.
Okay, I'm boasting, but I did. I'm never going to answer that one because they were both very different. One was very modern and more like a footballer, which is beautiful gestures, beautiful bodies. It was more sports, that's Gene. And Fred was always 1.5 foot off the ground. He made everything beautiful. I saw him walk into a shop and walk to the counter, and he was dancing. He walked beautifully.
So, Leslie, you got married at 19, but that relationship ended 4 years later. And in 1955, you came to London to star in a stage production of Gigi. It was directed by Peter Hall, who went on to found the Royal Shakespeare Company. You fell completely in love with Peter and became pregnant with your son, Christopher. You said about that time that it was a matter of survival to have this child and live with this remarkable man. Why did you feel so strongly about where your future lay?
Oh, I think it's important to follow your heart, not follow plans. That's deadly. No, you have to follow your heart wherever it leads you. And I was so in love with Peter. And I succeeded in having two remarkable children. So we started a good thing there.
Mm-hmm. In 1958, you went on to play Gigi in the feature film, but you later found out that your singing parts had been dubbed. How did you feel about that?
Terrible. I was very, very angry because Arthur Freed hadn't told me.
He was the producer, Arthur Freed.
Yeah.
Did you talk to him about it? Did you speak to him?
Yes. I went up to his office, and as soon as I sat down, he said, just a minute, got up and walked out towards his secretary. And then there I was, waiting. And after about 10 minutes, I stood up and said to the secretary, "What's happened? Where's Arthur?" And she said, "Oh, didn't he tell you? He left 10 minutes ago."
That's showbiz.
That's Arthur Freed. He was a great, great, great producer, but he didn't like confrontation.
Leslie, I want to take you on a few years. Your marriage to Peter Hall was under strain. You'd separated and you then had a 2-year affair with the actor Warren Beatty. You became Hollywood's it couple. How do you look back at that time in your life?
Well, what distressed me was that Peter didn't want me to work and didn't want to work with me. I was to stay home. Mm-hmm. So I walked out. And Warren happened to be there.
And what was life with him like?
Well, Warren was real Hollywood. He understood the workings of Hollywood, what you have to do to keep your status and so on. Always be in front of the press. And for me, that was exhausting. And I didn't like that. I thought this was artificial. So our affair lasted 2 years. That was it.
It's time for some more music, I think. This is your sixth choice. Why are you taking it to the island with you? And what is it?
The Requiem. From Mozart, which to me is perhaps the most beautiful piece ever written. Hearing a requiem in a church, you can't stop crying. It's so beautiful.
Thank you.
part of the opening of Mozart's Requiem in D minor, performed by the Vienna Singverein Choir with the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Herbert von Karajan. Leslie Caron, in 1967, you received some terrible news. Your mother had taken her own life. It must have been a dreadful time for you. How did you cope?
You don't cope. You survive, but you don't cope. I'm so sorry. There was not much help in those days. But it, little by little, she got worse and worse, drinking and taking pills. No, it just was, I guess, a real down moment in my life. Very, very down.
I mean, it must have been devastating for all of you. And obviously, you know, you had your own life to keep going as well.
Yes. And of course, I had two lovely children that I had to take care of.
Mm. The 70s and 80s were difficult for you professionally too. The acting jobs dried up, so you started writing fiction and you even renovated a property in Burgundy, which you turned into an inn. But your mental health began to deteriorate and you had your own problems with alcohol too. It must have felt like a time of such uncertainty.
Yes, but I was determined to survive.
Who helped you? Who did you turn to?
I went to places where they cure you for addiction and did a pretty good job about it. And I decided to come close to my family. I moved to London, and that was very important for me. I do believe in looking for happiness. So you get there if you want to.
I think it's time for some more music. It's your seventh disc today, Leslie. What's it going to be and why have you selected it?
Well, there's one American singer whom I really admired, Randy Newman. And he wrote one song about pollution. It's called Burn On. And it's about a river that's so polluted that it burns on. I mean, it's a figure of speech, but the song is absolutely wonderful.
There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake. There's a red moon rising on the Cuyahoga River, rolling into Cleveland to the lake.
Randy Newman and Burn On. So, Leslie Caron, life had started to get better and get brighter. You started getting parts again. In 2002, you starred in the Merchant Ivory film, Le Divorce. And a few years later, you won an Emmy Award for your performance in the American television series Law and Order Special Victims Unit. I wonder what the experience of looking back at your life and your career is like for you, Leslie. Are you proud of your achievements? I know you were very hard on yourself when you were young.
Much more than I used to be. Yeah. I used to think, oh, I've done nothing. I have never succeeded in anything. I used to be very negative about my career. I think I've done pretty well. Yeah.
I'm about to cast you away to our desert island. It's not the first time, but of course you haven't been there for a while. What will you miss most, do you think?
Friends, family, dogs. I am more and more impressed by animals and their companionship, their kindness, their solicitude for us humans.
We do have one more disc to hear from you before you go. What's your last choice today going to be?
Oh, Les Feuilles Mortes, sang by Yves Montand. Not only is it a great song, but I knew the two people involved. I knew Jacques Prévert quite well. He was a friend of Jean Renoir and used to come and see our play, because I did a play with Jean Renoir in Paris. He used to come, you know, 2, 3, 4 times, always with his cigarette bit hanging out of his mouth. Also, the music is by Joseph Cosma. And Cosma was a wonderful composer. And the play that I did with Renoir had music by Cosma. So this Les Feuilles Mortes is very dear to me.
Oh, je voudrais tant que tu te souviennes des jours heureux où nous étions amis. En ce temps-là, la vie était plus belle et le soleil plus brûlant qu'aujourd'hui. Les feuilles mortes se ramassent à la pelle. Tu vois, je n'ai pas oublié. Les feuilles mortes se ramassent à la pelle.
Les Feuilles Mortes, performed by Yves Montand, composed by Joseph Cosma, with lyrics by Jacques Prévert. So, Leslie Caron, it's time. I'm going to cast you away to the desert island. I'm going to give you the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare to take with you. I'm sure you remember from the first time around. You can also choose a book of your own. What would you like to have with you?
Of all the great, great books written in history, I've chosen something quite modest. It is called The Sixth Sense of Animals, and it's written by Maurice Burton. It's a whole book about stories of animals who have given their lives to save humans. And if ever I'm in a dark mood, that's the book I will read.
You can also, Leslie, have a luxury item. What have you chosen for that?
You won't believe it. It's a cutlass. I mean, every girl needs a cutlass on a desert island.
Now, I happen to know that your idea of a cutlass takes you back to filming Father Goose in Jamaica with Cary Grant. You stayed in a house with your own butler. What happened, Leslie?
Well, we were each given a house. Cary had a house. I had a house. And every morning, my butler, who was dressed in black with a bow tie and a pair of black shoes, would take off the shoes, take the cutlass between his teeth, and climb up the coconut tree. And when he got to a coconut, slam, he would get one or two coconuts for breakfast.
Well, you know, Leslie, I'm not really supposed to allow you to choose a practical item for your luxury, but because this is involving Cary Grant, you, this amazing story, and the possibility of you shinning up a tree to hack down some coconuts, I'm absolutely going to allow you this cutlass. How could I refuse? Of course, it's yours. Thank you for that story.
Thank you.
And finally, one more question, Leslie Caron. Which one track of the 8 pieces that you've shared with us today would you save from the waves if you could choose only one?
I think Maria Callas, Mi chiamano Mimi. It's delicious. She had such a fabulous voice.
Leslie Caron, thank you so very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
What a pleasure it was. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Leslie, and I do love that image of her shinning up a coconut tree with a cutlass between her teeth. We've cast many other actresses away, including Lauren Bacall, Dame Helen Mirren, Dame Emma Thompson and Helen McCrory. You can find their episodes in our Desert Island Discs programme archive and through BBC Sounds. The studio manager for today's programme was Jackie Marjoram, the assistant producer was Christine Pavlovsky, and the producer was Paula McGinley. Next time, my guest will be the writer Anne Tyler. I do hope you'll join us.
Hi, Here we go, Otie. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Dance. It has the power to connect and to entertain. And in a new series for BBC Radio 4 and BBC Sounds, I explore the iconic dancers who have been doing just that.
Dance, it really, I think, saved my life.
Join me, Oti Mabuse, as I delve into the lives of the innovators and the mold breakers who have changed dance forever.
Gene Kelly was this working class guy that I just really connected with that.
Oti Mabuse's Dancing Legends on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.